This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. This is a show about opening up the often mysterious world of how doctors think. The goal? To empower the listener to gain access to the best healthcare possible.
Hello and welcome to Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson. And I am Dr. Paul Anderson coming to you from Anderson Medical Specialty Associates in Seattle, Washington. Today on the show, we're going to have a discussion in the big picture about genetics and genomic medicine, but specifically about one of the more popularized areas of that, and that is a topic called methylation. So it's a strange sounding word, but we'll talk about it and what it means. And the reason I wanted to do a show about this particular topic of genetic medicine is it probably has the most popularization because of the availability of the internet, and there's whole Facebook groups devoted to it, etc. So that popularity, plus our ability to test it, makes it something that a lot of people are interested in and curious about and wanting to talk about. So just by way of introduction of the topic, if you've never heard of this before, or you've heard and it's confusing to you, or you had someone try to explain it to you and it didn't make any sense, what we're going to talk about today is a process, and it's a process inside your body called methylation. It is a way for the body to activate certain processes that help you with repair and maintenance of your body. So we'll talk about the mechanics a little bit later, but if you just keep in mind throughout that this is a real core process within your system, and it's how your system does most of its beginnings of repair and cell turnover, you could see that it would be a fairly important part of human biology and medicine. The specific area that people get tested is one group of genes that are involved in coding for enzymes that help your body do this methylation process. So the gene set is known as MTHFR, which is an acronym for a very long word, and it's basically a grouping of genes that make this enzyme for your body. This is the kind of enzyme that if you were born without it, you wouldn't be able to sustain life, so it is a very necessary enzyme system. The other thing about it is that humans have always had this gene, and they've always had this enzyme, otherwise we wouldn't be here. And so that would mean that we've always had the potential for other genetic or genomic problems with this gene. So why is it so popular now as opposed to 20 years ago? Well, now people can test for genetic information, and one of the earlier things that started to be tested amongst some doctors was this MTHFR gene group, and the reason being that it is potentially associated with some ill health and potentially other diseases. So we'll talk about that as we come up too. So you may have heard of somebody getting a genetic panel done or tested, or a MTHFR test done through their doctor, and that's really what we want to talk about today. We do have a couple of things. We've had a couple of really good emails that kind of set up some of the topic today. And so I thought I'd read the first one because it leads to another reason why we're doing this particular show today. So somebody wrote in, and they were considering coming into the clinic as a patient, and they wrote and they said, would you please ask Dr. Anderson specifically what his experience is with genetic type of medicine, as well as with MTHFR as a test and as treatment? Well, that's a really good question. You should probably, you know, ask any healthcare person what they know about what they're trying to treat with you. And so just by way of background, the MTHFR and the genetic testing is something, because of our involvement with chronically ill patients and cancer patients, that we here at the clinic and in my research world and life have been involved with as long as that testing has really been available. Now, genetic testing for some things has been available for a fairly long time, but a lot of these things we're going to talk about today have not really been commercially available for more than about 5 years. So it's really a fairly new thing in medicine. So I've been doing it as long as it's been available to physicians. In the world of direct patient care, I have looked at and assessed and used as part of patient care this methylation genetic testing plus other genetic testing in a few hundred patients at this point. So it's not a small group of people. And one of the other things that I have the privilege to be involved with is postgraduate work and mentoring with other physicians as they learn this particular topic, and through the case assessments that I've worked with other doctors on, the number of patients interacted with is now, it's well over 2,000. So it's a fairly large group. And so that does inform this discussion and where we see this fit into the world of, could this help your health overall to know about this? So, want to talk a little bit more about this very small but very important genetic part of a human, and why, number one, why doctors know more about it now, and number two, what they believe it does and it has impact for with respect to health, and then number three, what kind of things can be done if you have some genetic difficulty there. So the first thing would be we've sort of set up this idea that this methylation process is how your body starts repair processes. So if we just expand that a little bit, the best way to think about the methylation process, and it's really more than just this MTHFR, but that's kind of right in the right in the middle of all of the methylation. And here's the best thing to think about. We all know that when our cells divide, we have to have the DNA of the cell divide so it makes two brand new cells. That's how we turn over and repair our cells. At the beginning of that process, when your cell is going to turn over and make itself into two new cells to repair or replace itself, which is all cells do this on a different schedule, the DNA has to be copied. And in copying the DNA, there's two portions, and we don't need to go into the names of them because it's curious but not that helpful. But if these two portions that do this work, what we see is that methylation is involved, this particular process that MTHFR is related to, it is involved at the very beginning of almost all of the little pieces of DNA repair. So if you think about it, if your DNA is slow in being turned over and duplicated, you're going to be slow in making new baby cells and repairing stuff. So if that's the problem there, that's why I said if you didn't do this at all, you wouldn't even be here, because there would be no way for you to have any cell division. So if that's really the process, then what happens if I have a slowdown there? So then that's the next thing you need to think about is, so you go to a doctor and they do this test for you. What is the test looking for? You know, it's sort of different from a regular lab test where you might be looking for, say, a hormone level or a level of a mineral in your body. What they're looking at is a genetic signature from your genome. And there's different ways to do the test, but they're basically the same. And they look at the major medically important MTHFR variants. And there's a whole bunch of MTHFRs. There's a lot of backup in the human body, which is great because that keeps us from having more problems with it. But when they look at the testing, what they're really looking at is there are two primary MTHFR genes that we know are associated with certain types of diseases. So it doesn't mean that the other ones are unimportant. It just means, based on our understanding of the world right now, the diseases we've associated with MTHFR really come down to these two pairs. And those two pairs are the C677 and the A1298. And so these pairs mean that you have one half from your mother and one half from your father. So there's a maternal and a paternal part on each side. And there are three options for each gene, and that is they're both totally normal, or you have one abnormal and one normal one. They call that a heterozygous. Or you have two abnormal ones, and that's called a homozygous defect. So obviously, if you have a double-sided, a homozygous defect, it's going to be more of a problem for you, because that slows the gene down, and it slows the production of that enzyme down that does this process of methylation. So the best estimates are, if you have two injured genes, a homozygous pair, that you're probably somewhere around 70%, maybe 75% diminished in your ability to do the work of that gene. It's not totally broken, but it's really, really slow. And so when we see this with people, the first thing we want to look at then is, when you get these gene problems, is there two of them that are not good, or just one? Or then there's another option with this, because there's two different kinds of genes, and they call it a compound heterozygous, meaning each of the genes has one injury. Now, one injury on one gene is not such a big deal. It can be basically worked around fairly simply. But one injury on each of the genes can slow the whole system down a fair amount. And there's no for sure agreement on this. But again, it's probably on the order of 40 to 60% slower. And that means that you're going to be slower when you do all of these important methylation processes. Now, the next thing to consider is, what would methylating and DNA repair really, how does that play out in my health if that's not working correctly? Because, you know, there's sort of a lot of things in this world that we can test or look at, and then it may or may not have any real impact on a person's health or prevention. So it's sort of gee whiz information. Well, so we get questions a lot with people, is this genetic thing that you're looking at just sort of nothing you can do about it anyway, so why would we bother? Well, here's something to consider. And this is what we see with patients who are chronically ill, is we do check these things in the chronically ill population for reasons we'll talk about now and a little bit later as well. And the biggest reason is that in chronic illness, we see a long onset of a slowdown of many parts of the body. So the immune system gets a little worse over time, and they start to get more infections, or just they're run down more. They can become anxious or depressed, or have sleep disturbances or other neurological, neurobiological problems that will go on. They can wind up with difficulty in muscle recovery. So you go out and you work out, or you do something physically active, and you pay for it for 3 or 4 days afterwards. So a lot of poor recovery time, a lot of global digestive troubles in the chronically ill. One of the things that you can look at, which makes very biological and also just logical sense, is those areas that are all over the body that the chronically ill people will develop trouble in. And some people it's just one area, and some people it's all of the areas, unfortunately. All of those areas are related to areas where the cells repair and turn over or metabolize on a faster scale than the rest of the body. So what does that mean? Well, that basically means that in the nervous system, when you get these neurobiological things like sleep trouble or anxiety or whatever, That's because every minute of every day you're building and releasing neurotransmitters so your brain can run, and then you're getting rid of them through metabolism. Those are all kind of methylation involved steps. In your immune system, you have your bone marrow making all of your primary immune cells. That's a very rapidly dividing tissue. And so if methylation is slow, DNA repair is slow. And that means that that rapidly dividing tissue, like the bone marrow, will slow down a bit. The digestive tract is very much the same. It turns over constantly. Every week you're building new cells, but about every 12 weeks you have a completely new lining to your digestive tract. So you could imagine if, you know, you're requiring that many DNA turnovers and your digestive tract can't keep up, you're going to wind up with, you know, not a very healthy digestive tract. And with muscle recovery, it has to do with a lot of things. The neurotransmitter portion is a big deal, but also the muscle tissue. The cells of the muscles are very, very quickly repaired, and whenever you use them, they need repair. So we're going to head into a break right now. We'll just take a minute off, and when we come back, what we're going to talk about is areas where the research and the clinical information has showed that knowing about this problem is useful. So we will be heading to a break right now, and we'll come back in 1 minute.
Anderson Medical Specialty Associates is the clinic that Dr. Anderson founded to provide high-quality, integrative medical care to those with cancer and chronic illnesses. In over 20 years of work with this patient population and research into the best practices for treatment, this clinic provides the highest level of care. Their focuses include all types of cancer, autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis and lupus, as well as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and chronic infections such as Lyme and Lyme-like illness. Their only goal is to help each person find the best path to health for their individual needs. Located in Seattle, Washington, visit the clinic website, www.amsa1.com, or call the clinic at 206-629-2186.
And we're back talking today about genetics generally, but this idea of testing for methylation defects or MTHFR defects in humans and how that might relate to their health or disease or possibly even prevention. And prior to the break, we went over the basics of, you know, so what is a methylation and what's it do for me? And the quick version of that is the things that we test for are genes that make enzymes that create this process called methylation. And methylation is important to two really huge areas of how people operate biologically. One of them is the nervous system, the maintenance of and production of things the nervous system needs to operate. And then the other is the repair of cells through DNA replication. So without methylation, you can't make new DNA and you can't make new cells. And without new cells, you don't really heal very well. And we talked about how that could theoretically be related to chronic illness and a number of other things. So the next kind of question that will come up from people is, well, is there any, you know, what kind of research is there about these genetic things? And is it to a place where it can help us as far as treatment or therapy or prevention? Well, one of the things to consider is in the National Library of Medicine has this giant online system that is called PubMed. And if you go looking in PubMed for MTHFR and its related articles, there's well over 50,000 peer-reviewed articles about different aspects just of this set of genes. So it's one of those things that's been studied a fair amount. It's not like something no one has heard of. But when it comes to clinical medicine and clinical use, there's always a big difference between the theoretical things that people publish and write about and then what happens in people when we, you know, interact with this. So in this section, I wanted to share two different areas where there have been human studies and outcomes done, because that's really where the rubber meets the road as far as, is this even worth looking at? The first is in 2012, researchers, many of them from Harvard University, published, and they've published a few things about this, but specifically, the one I'm talking about, 2012, was looking at a group of patients who had were diagnosed with depression, and they were diagnosed with major treatment-resistant depression, which means it was of severe nature of the depression, and all of the first-line standard treatments for depression had failed. So one of the biggest concerns with depressed patients is if their therapy fails, then obviously they have a higher risk of a lot of other problems, including suicide and worsening depression, et cetera, et cetera. So this is something that is very, very much of a concern in the psychiatric community and in general in medicine. So they looked at these patients, and for biologic reasons that were, you know, as we say, they look good on paper, they said, well, what if these people had trouble with the nervous system part of methylation, and what if we just gave them the activated methylated folate that is what this slow enzyme is supposed to make? Because we know from other studies that the punchline of methylated folate in the central nervous system is to improve the outflow of things like serotonin and norepinephrine and dopamine and things that oppose depression. So again, you know, in research, and this is what we do, you look at what makes sense, what do we know from basic science or, you know, that sort of thing, and would it make sense and would it be ethical and safe to do this in humans? And they said, well, because these people are already treatment resistant, we don't have any other things to give them, so we can try this. So they took a group of patients and they did this with them. And in a very large percentage of the patients that they studied, when they gave them high doses of this activated methylated folic acid, which basically is like going around the genetic problem, their treatment-resistant depression became improved, and in those that it became improved but not enough, it became treatable in many cases with other medical interventions. And so that got the attention of a lot. That was a fairly large landmark publication. And so what we started to see at that point is a lot of the psychiatrists started to try that therapy on their patients who had treatment-resistant depression. Now, in the case of treatment-resistant depression and working with a psychiatrist, they've already ruled out the drugs or other treatments that just didn't work. So they've already tried a number of things. Some psychiatrists then started to actually look at the genetic variations of MTHFR, which can be ordered through the lab that does all of your other labs will do them. And they would look, and then they would start to get a little bit more, you know, try and be more informed. And they'd say, well, if it's, you know, a person who has a two gene deficit, the homozygous kind, we might treat them with more of this methylfolate stuff for a while, see if that works out. So that's one example of human research where, in the group that was looked at, treatment-resistant depression, there was a cause and effect and a correlation. When we give them the treatment, we have an outcome that is improved. And so why would they use this treatment of methylfolate, the active kind of folic acid? Why would they use that? Well, the thing that the MTHFR genes do at the end of their activity is to put a methyl group onto folate. So they create methylfolate. So biologically, the pharmacology people said, well, if that's not working, why don't we just give them methylfolate and work around the gene problem? So this is helpful, and it answers one of the questions, which is, so I find this information out, can I do anything about it? Well, yeah. The one thing is you can supplement the thing that your body's not making, which is the 5-methylfolate, and often that will be helpful for patients. So that's an example of using the information in a way that is helpful with humans. The next example comes from a study of patients not with major depression, but this group of people were studied because they had chronic fatigue and or fibromyalgia. So chronic fatigue syndrome, which is just renamed this week, and then fibromyalgia syndrome, which have a lot of crossover. And this was a bit of a different study because it's a multifactorial illness. And this is actually a study that I ran, so I remember quite a bit about it. And we also presented this study in 2012, about the same time that the psychiatrists presented their study. And so basically, to cut this short, we took a group of about 100 people with diagnosed chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, or both. And the first thing we wanted to look at was, is there any difference between population-matched group with healthy people versus this group of 100 or so people who have chronic fatigue and fibro with respect to these genetic differences? So the first thing, and why did we ask that question? You know, in research, you're always asking questions, and you hope to get some sort of answer with your research. Well, the reason we asked that question was there was really only one publication, and it was from Ireland, and it was quite an old publication, and it essentially had concluded that there was no correlation between MTHFR status and chronic fatigue fibromyalgia. It seemed to us from our patient data that that wasn't true, but we didn't have numbers. So the first thing we did is we took and we used matched group. So the match group that was the healthy group was well published in the research, and it was based on genetic heritage. So Caucasians have different incidence of this problem than people with African background, and that they are different from people with Hispanic background. So we had to make sure that we matched the genetic heritage across the board. Otherwise, you're comparing apples and oranges. So we matched them. And so on the control side, the healthy side, we had data on over 5,000 normal healthy people. And so we knew what kind of genetic defects they had in MTHFR in the normal population. We compared that to the chronic fatigue fibro population of 100 people. And what we found was that in the chronic fatigue fibromyalgia people that we had in our group, we had a significantly higher, meaning many, many, many percent, not just a few percent, higher incidence of the more problematic variations. So we had about a 30-40% increase in the 2-gene defect of the C677 kind, which is the more impactful kind, over the normal group, and then the compound heterozygous one bad arm on each side of 2 genes was also greatly increased, and the less impactful varieties were less in the sick population. So then we took that information and said, well, it appears with this group that we have a difference from the healthy people. And so then the next thing that you need to ask is, would it make any difference to treat it? Can we treat it, and would it make any difference? And so a group of this larger group that we looked at had all agreed that they felt like they had improved. We had done a lot of work with them, but they wanted to improve more, and they wanted to see if they could break through some of the stagnation in their case. And so what happened was, when we intervened and did a similar thing to what the psychiatrist had done, where we added in active folic acid and the methylfolate form, and we gave them active B12, et cetera, some other B vitamins, When we gave them the active forms that worked around their genetic problems, what we saw over the course of the next year when we followed them was they would have anywhere between 50 and 75% improvement in their baseline fatigue and pain scores. And so if you think about that, this is a group that's already had some improvement. And when we found that they had defects in these areas and we tried to treat it, they actually had even more improvement. Now, most of the people, because I was involved with all of these cases, I can tell you, most of the people, it was not like the next day they felt improved. It was generally over the course of 6 months where they started to feel it, and over about a year where they could really look backwards and redo their symptom surveys and all of that and see an improved effect. But it was a pretty revealing study to do, because there are a lot of people with chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia where there's many, many, many things that are wrong, and you're usually treating many things. But this was an area that had been somewhat overlooked, and to largely overlooked, in the treatment of most of these patients. So we have two, those are just two examples of human research where you have not only was the problem there, but if we treat the problem, does it really help? And in both cases, which makes good biological sense because of the kind of problems that people had, it really did, it matched up. The cause and the effect were well matched. So a question arises sometimes in, how do I test this? Let's say my doctor wants to test this. Well, there's a couple of ways. now that the human genome is sequenced and there's ways to find these particular genes we're looking for, et cetera, many of the, what we would call the most medically relevant gene pairs can be tested through any of your regular laboratories. So if your doctor is concerned about a particular genetic, disease that you may be a carrier for, or maybe you're expressing, symptoms of the disease, they can do a particular test for that disease. So with the MTHFR, that those two pairs are very testable through your standard labs. Now, they send them to a DNA lab that does it specially, but that's basically how it's done. There are also other tests that people do, and there are things that are done that are just direct to the consumer sort of tests. And if you've ever looked at DNA testing, or, you know, seen a show about it or anything, a lot of times you'll see people do a cheek swab or they'll do saliva. The reason for that is there's a lot of your cells inside of the cheek swab and the saliva. And so, a genetic, testing company can take that sample and they can sequence, the genome out of it. So while that sort of testing is not brand new, it's in relationship to a lot of other testing more in the infancy. And so we're seeing a lot of people getting their own genetics tested and looked at. And one of the ways, so people will go to commercial companies that deal directly with patients, and there's not really a doctor involved, and they'll send off and have this done, and then you can have other types of reports run to tell you what the genes look like. The upside of this is that it's relatively financially feasible to do. It's reasonably easy. You know, there's no blood involved. And you can get lots of information. One of the downsides of doing this sort of thing is if you take it into a lot of healthcare providers, this is really a brand new area for most healthcare providers. And so they'll look at it and say, well, this is great information and there's certainly a lot of it, but this is not part of what I do. And, you know, you fill in the blank for the healthcare provider. It's certainly not really a part of primary care. It's not a part of a lot of things. And so when we see patients and we do a lot of this sort of thing, we incorporate it into their overall health care, and we give advice based on it within a framework and within perspective of the entire person. And so it's just like any other lab test in that sense. The lab test is a number, and it's a number or it's a value that's related to normals or abnormals. But what really matters is, does that match up with how you're feeling and what you need to do about your health? And the genetic testing is kind of very similar in that it needs to match up to your goals of health or your goals for prevention of disease or your signs and symptoms, and do they really relate to these gene problems or not. So we're going to head into our last break here in just a few seconds. But when we come back, what we want to do is give some stories and some examples of ways beyond the things that we've talked about that this knowledge can be used in an overall health assessment and plan for both prevention, but also treatment of certain issues that people will have. So we'll go to a break now, and we'll be right back.
Anderson Medical Specialty Associates is the clinic that Dr. Anderson founded to provide high-quality, integrative medical care to those with cancer and chronic illnesses. In over 20 years of work with this patient population and research into the best practices for treatment, this clinic provides the highest level of care. Their focuses include all types of cancer, autoimmune diseases such as multiple sclerosis and lupus, as well as chronic fatigue syndrome, fibromyalgia, and chronic infections such as Lyme and Lyme-like illness. Their only goal is to help each person find the best path to health for their individual needs. Located in Seattle, Washington, visit the clinic website, www.amsa1.com, or call the clinic at 206-629-2186.
And we're back with Medicine and Health with Dr. Paul Anderson, coming to you from Anderson Medical Specialty Associates in Seattle, Washington. Today we're talking about the part of genetics and genetic testing that involves a very basic process to humans, and that's the methylation process. And we've talked in the last two sections about how methylation is very core to the way that the brain works. It's also very core to cell replication and cell repair. So when we have genetic issues like MTHFR and other defects in that system, it can slow the process down. So remember, we've said it doesn't stop, because if that process stopped, life would cease. But if it slows down, repair can be slowed down, and some of your neurobiological, your brain functions can be a little bit out of balance as well. And then in the second section, we gave an overview of a couple of human research projects where this information was used to treat. One group was treatment-resistant depression, and there was very positive findings there. Another group was chronic fatigue fibromyalgia, and although it was not the only treatment done, it was part of a global treatment protocol that improved the outcomes with those patients. So what we see is we have something that's potentially helpful, and it's something that's probably good to know about as far as your overall health. But there's another part of it that's very important too. And this is, like a lot of things, one of the things that we were talking about right before the break was when a person experiences disease or symptoms, the experience is very individual to that person. So while most people with one disease will get certain symptoms and signs that go on, there will be a variety of ways that those symptoms are experienced. And one of the things that you see is that a lot of times the lab testing will indicate the disease or the disorder, but it may not indicate the severity of the experience of the disease. And so you think again, well, you know, they're this whole group of people with this one problem, they're all humans, they have the same kind of body. Why would there be some difference? Well, it's similar with the testing of these genetic markers. So one of the things that you have to keep in mind as a reality check is the influence of not just what the gene is doing or how broken or how non-broken the gene is, and then what does that gene do and would that be a problem for me if it didn't work, but also there's this other factor with genetics, and it's called epigenetics. And one of the parts of epigenetics that's really important is if you have a genetic weakness and you take two people with identical genetic weaknesses, okay, and then one of the people has very little stress on that area of their body that's controlled by those genes, and the other person has a great deal of stress on areas of their body that are controlled by those genes, over a period of years, the person with more stress, they call it epigenetic stress, will exhibit more trouble with those genes. It's sort of like if you have a chair on a leg, a leg on a chair, as a matter of fact. So if you have a chair and one of the legs is cracked, if no one sits on the chair, the cracked leg is really not going to be that much of an issue, except maybe cosmetic. If you have a little child sit on the chair a few times, it's probably, again, not such a huge thing. But if the biggest person in the household is always sitting on the chair with a crack in the leg, the crack is going to get worse and worse and worse over time, and then eventually, probably, the leg is going to break. And so that's a outside stressor. It's like an epigenetic stressor on the genes. So one of the things that we see with people is if they have these genetic things and they've had a lot of other stresses that increase a demand for the product. And remember, the product of methylation is really those two big areas. One is repair of your cells, which is everything in your body, basically. And the other is the way that your nervous system works, which is pretty important. So if you've had a lot of injuries, if you've had a lot of infections, a lot of illnesses, you're going to probably experience a methylation defect differently than somebody who has been relatively disease-free and hasn't had a lot of stresses and injuries and illnesses and other problems. Now, you both have the same issue, but there's going to be a very different need between the person who's had lots of stressors and the person who's just had a little bit of stress. And so before the break, what we were talking about was all of this has to be considered in the totality of the person who is the owner of the genes. So when someone comes in and they have one of these big gene reports and all that, that's the first thing that we need to find out is, number one, you know, what are your overall needs? Are they about diseases you have right now, or is it about prevention? What's the level of your symptoms? What's the level of things bothering you? And then the next thing is, have other things been looked at that might create those same symptoms? You know, for instance, fatigue can be caused by anything. So have we checked into all of the other things? And then finally, there then needs to be a personalized match between, okay, so you are coming and you have a complaint of anxiety, difficulty sleeping, and poor muscle recovery. That's a really common combination. So you have a person who has background anxiety that gets worse with stress. You have a person with sleep troubles. And then if they go and they do physical activity, they don't repair well. They don't recover very well. So what you see in that person then is then you can look at the genetic influences and you can say, well, there's a number of areas here in this genetic profile that would match up biologically with some of the troubles you have. Now, we're talking specifically about methylation today, and so we'll stick to kind of that. But in the next time, in a few weeks, when we talk about this again, we'll kind of talk from the broader view of, well, what other things can we test for genetically, and how does that help or confuse your health? So if we're looking there, and we have somebody who's had a panel done and they have their whole methylation panel mapped out, if they have anxiety or they have sleep troubles or they have other things, there's an interplay between in the brain between the methylation, which is kind of supply side, and then the metabolism of the neurotransmitters that are methylated. So you remember back to that Harvard study where the people were depressed and they gave them methylfolate and they were better. Well, the neurotransmitters, little chemicals in your brain that make you have all of the patterns of thoughts and feelings and everything that you have, the methylated ones are generally excitatory. They're kind of uppers in the brain. So if you think about it, if you have somebody who has some anxiety and sleep problems, they may be having too much supply there. And so they may actually have trouble with the balance. They might be doing well with methylating, but not so good with the removal of it. On the other hand, if you had that same person, they had physical exercise intolerance, but they're depressed, they might actually have a low supply side and maybe they eliminate just fine. So this is an example of you could have two very different expressions of the same genetic troubles. So then the logical question that usually comes up is, okay, so this is like a lot of other things in medicine. It's information. We need to fit it into the whole picture and we need to see what sort of influence this might have on the person and how they're feeling badly. So if that's the case and we've gotten to the place of maybe this would make a difference to know about this, and then we find out and yes, indeed, it's, you know, you've got two genes that are not working right. What do you do about it? Well, in the case of methylation, it's a process that's a cycle. Like most things in biology that work in living organisms are cyclic. And that means that in the middle is this MTHFR guy, and it helps with adding methyl groups to folate. But it runs to another step, another step, another step, and winds up back on itself. And this is because we eat food that has folic acid, and it has to be activated and turned into this methylated folate. So the first thing we usually look at is we match up those symptoms, and then we take a look at the whole cycle, and the MTHFR in the middle, and the other guys around the side, and decide, is it really not too injured, like there's not a lot of genetic problems there? Then we may need to focus elsewhere, just do some general support. If we look and most of the MTHFR process is not working well, it's got a lot of genetic issues, and then there's other support pathways that feed into it and they're broken, then in those people, it makes logical sense to do a treatment trial based on their genetics and their symptoms. And we give them things such as were used in those two studies that we talked about. We use the active form of folate, the methylfolate and methyl B12 maybe, and some other support nutrients that feed in there. And so then we do exactly what you would do with any other treatment. You follow up with the person, and over time you see if this is helping or not. And in some cases it's very background and it's helping on the, you know, kind of the low key scale. But I've actually had patients who had essentially brain chemistry balance issues where they really in the first month started to feel just more like themselves. And after 3 or 4 months, they started to feel quite a bit better and they were able to deal with things a lot better. So some people it really does make effect much more quickly. So that's an important thing. It is something that's treatable. The next and the other side of it is, this is a question we get a lot. So what could go wrong if this is so good to do? Why doesn't everybody just take methyl folate and methyl B12 and all these things? Well, the best answer to that is because not everyone needs it. If you have functioning enzyme systems and you're eating food that has folic acid and B12 and you're eating, you know, a lot of vegetable material that has the folates in it, and you're getting B12 from your protein sources, etc., you may not need any extra if your genes are working well and you don't have symptoms. So we've had people come in and literally be sick because they were trying to treat this problem and they either took too much of something or took it out of balance. So when you ask the question of, well, what could go wrong and shouldn't just everybody take a lot of this? The answer is no, because they don't need it. And so the best examples, unfortunately, are when people just have these very unusual reactions and they feel very sick from taking the active forms of these nutrients. If you think about it and you go back like to the depression study where the methyl folate, for instance, creates a lot of the happy brain hormones like serotonin and dopamine and norepinephrine. If you don't need any more of those right now and you take a bunch of methylfolate, you might make extra and you might get more anxious. You might get more sleepless. You might have more pain, you know, all sorts of things. And some of the most challenging cases that we get are when people have looked at their genetics and they've gone out and they've sort of self-diagnosed, or maybe they saw, you know, a practitioner and they said, well, you've got these genes that are problematic and we're going to give you these nutrients or these treatments to work around these genetic problems. And if there's any other issues and the person doesn't know about it, the treatment might look good on paper, but actually makes the person feel worse. And that can be for many, many, many different reasons that that will happen. Most of the time, it's just that there were not enough balance in the nutrients the person was getting in order for the body to use the nutrients appropriately. Sometimes it's just plain they just got too much. The dose was just too high. And that happened a lot too. After these earlier studies where we were looking at really sick people, you had, you know, people, doctors kind of looking at the doses that we treated, you know, people who had depression or chronic fatigue and fibro. And if you took those same doses and gave them to a relatively healthy person, they would be way over treated and they would not feel well. So again, it kind of comes back to, what we wind up saying about a lot of things. Number one is that the body does need balance. So if there's a genetic issue that creates an imbalance, you want to find out if you've got the problem or not and if that's the reason. And then when you go to treat these things or to do lifestyle or dietary changes or other things that go around it, you need to make sure that you're working with someone that can look at the big picture. So if you do aggravate, they can back off and figure out what was missing from the picture. And so as we wrap up today talking about methylation and MTHFR and related defects, we just want to remind ourselves that this is, it's been, as long as humans have been around, it's been a part of the way our biology works. It's a way that our cells repair. It's a way our nervous system keeps track of things and makes very important signaling messengers. And we can now find out about the genetic problems that we have with this area. The most important part is making sure you're working with somebody who is able to look at the big picture and is able to guide you through a treatment that makes sense and is helpful on as many fronts as possible as you're being treated. I am Dr. Paul Anderson, and I'm coming to you today from Anderson Medical Specialty Associates in North Seattle, where genetics and genomic medicine is part of what we include in our treatment with our patients with chronic illnesses, and it's part of a lot of research that's going on with patients who have cancers and related to their treatment, but also prevention. So we're very interested in this part of medicine, and all of our physicians are knowledgeable about this area, and we are constantly studying it and looking forward. So it's been very much of a pleasure to talk to you today, and I'll see you on the radio in 1 week.
You've been listening to Medicine and Health with your host, Dr. Paul Anderson. Visit the clinic website at www.amsa1.com or call the clinic at 206-629-2186.